We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Ka'Chava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Ka'Chava's indulgent flavors today. Your future self will thank you. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code HEALTH for 15% off your next order. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code HEALTH.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Talking to our newspaper panel, I'm joined in studio by Craig Hughes, political editor for the Irish Daily Mail, and Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. Thanks a million for coming into the studio this morning, guys. And then before we get into the papers, some news breaking from you last night. You have been banned from entering. How does one find out you were banned from entering a country?
I mean, I got an email from civil servants because we were due to travel to Palestine. I'm the chair of the delegation for relations with Palestine in the European Parliament. And this week is a week when a lot of those delegations go and do the work of sort of meeting with other politicians in those countries, or in the case of the delegation for relations with Palestine, look at how some of the EU funding is being spent. So I got an email from the civil servants who were organising the trip to say, apparently I'd been banned for 5 years. It was the first I'd heard of it. And a whole list of allegations against me as to why I had breached the rules for entering into Israel. Now, bear in mind, I wasn't trying to go to Israel. I was trying to go to Palestine, but Israel controls all the borders.
So I presume you were going through Tel Aviv to then get to Palestine.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, they listed Holocaust denial, October 7th denial, calling for the ICC arrest warrants to be upheld, calling for boycotts, calling for sanctions, and that all of these breached their rules for entry into Israel. So I have requested a full breakdown of which on those lists they think I have, you know, done, because certainly if it's Holocaust denial is a very serious offensive accusation, and in some European countries is actually, you know, a legal offence, and I'm certainly not a Holocaust denier, but it's not the first time that that charge has been made about me from Israeli authorities.
Yeah, but it's interesting that you had heard nothing about it up until you got there. And that trip has happened. Some of the other MEPs, I think, that were going on it did eventually go. Did they get into Palestine?
They did. They got into Palestine, and interestingly, of course, came back to me and saying, like, only when they were there did they realise even just how important these missions are, and that how big a problem it is for the Israeli authorities to treat the delegation in this manner and to refuse the chair access. I mean, I've only ever spoke up for international law and human rights. You know, the EU likes to pride itself on freedom of speech, freedom of expression. It calls Israel, it's one of its strongest allies in the region. This is how an ally treats its other ally is a bit bizarre and a bit of an insult to the institutions themselves. But they did get in, they did get to meet with refugees, with the Palestinian Authority, with lots of civil society, humanitarian aid organisations. But unfortunately, I didn't get to go.
And has there been any statement, any reaction from the Parliament on your behalf as a, you know, speaking up for you as an MEP?
No, I mean, and this is the second time. The first time in February when I was deported with two civil servants and another MEP, we kind of gave, I suppose, the benefit of the doubt to President Metsola, because we made the request that, look, we just want to go back. We want to be able to do the job. Will you give us a commitment that you will do your best to ensure that? Because at that stage, the Israeli foreign minister was in Brussels meeting with President Metsola when we were in the air. And Metsola had said to them, you know, our MEPs are traveling, and that we were told there'll be no issue. They're on the plane and they'll be allowed to enter. And then that was reversed when that meeting was over and the plane landed. So this time around, we again haven't had any statement from President Metsola. I've wrote to her asking for her to publicly condemn it, because interestingly, in the last mandate, when another MEP was arrested in Tel Aviv airport and deported, she did make a public statement.
Right.
So it is, you know, it wouldn't be a precedent for her to publicly comment and say, this is an insult to the institutions which she heads up. And, you know, that maybe there should be a reciprocal ban then for Israeli politicians who travel freely within the EU institutions.
Yeah, because Craig, there had been talk of that, I think, wasn't it, when we were both at the UN earlier in September, and the Taoiseach had been talking and sort of put it into his speech about banning the entry of some Israeli officials. I haven't heard any progress on that.
No, and I tried to just have a quick check there before we came on air. The Taoiseach did say at the United Nations that he was looking to ban some extremist Israeli politicians, those who have kind of, he would say, been kind of inciting violence. in the region. But I haven't seen that come into effect yet. But I will say that I think this is a really another really shameful part in this story, where you have a parliamentarian, EU parliamentarian, being denied access to Palestine. I think the EU has been very, very weak in relation to issues with Israel. Should have done more, unquestionably, should still be doing more. And I think the denial by Israel of access to Palestine, not just for parliamentarians, but to journalists also, really doesn't let us get a full understanding of the devastation that's there at the moment. And I wonder, notice from Jack Powers reporting the Irish Times that they've said that other people who were barred had been critical and called for boycotts of Israeli trade and things like that. So I wonder now, will this trend be followed on with other Irish members of Parliament and Irish members of the European Parliament when they try to go to Israel, whether it's to go there or to transit it into Palestine, because we have, you know, I think not just parties on the left, also the government parties have called for, you know, the Occupied Territories mm-hmm. Bill, which in a sense could be argued is a boycott of Israeli businesses. So I wonder if this is something we will see continued against Irish parliamentarians.
Yeah, have other Irish MEPs tried to, like, is this person but you, because obviously you've been very outspoken about Israel and what's going on, or do you think it's more of a thing against Irish politicians given the national stance and national mood?
No, I mean they've done it before against other MEPs from other countries, but it's the arbitrary nature of it is what's really frustrating, and the fact that, like, you know, a huge amount of work goes into planning these delegations. As I said, this is an official mission of the Parliament. The EU is one of the largest donors of aid to Palestine. It's really important that MEPs can stand over how that aid is being spent. You know, and then you make these requests and everything has to be given in detail, you know, what you're planning and doing, where you're going to be, what flights you're on, who you're meeting. And then it's just, you know, they pull the rug out from under you. As I said, in February, allowed us to board the plane, told Metsola to her face there's no issue with the mission, and then just reversed that decision. This time they left it again to the wire because they, you know, it's all about frustrating the work of the delegation. And you know, and as I used to say, it's like two fingers to the EU institutions. And if they don't stand up and object to it and take some reciprocal action, whatever that is, they're going to continue to do that and continue to show the EU up as being, you know, toothless organisation that effectively has no say over what's happening in Palestine at the moment.
Yeah, one message in on 087-1400-106, agreeing with you. The only way to counteract these bans is to ban all flights from Israel to the EU, says that texter, and we'll see whether there is any action on those words that Micheál Martin said at the UN. But Craig, moving to the papers, one story really dominating the front page, and that is DJ Carey across all of the papers. That sentence hearing, obviously there was a hearing yesterday and on Monday, and sort of an unusual situation where the judge has said expect a sentence, but actually hasn't handed down that sentence yet, obviously.
Yes, so DJ Carey, the well-known hurler turned fraudster, is spending the weekend in custody and preparing to be sentenced to a prison sentence on Monday. The detail of his crimes really is quite shocking. I mean, I haven't really engaged with the story as it's progressed until now, and the litany of offences and web of lies that he constructed really is jaw-dropping, amounting to about 400,000 in monies that he secured fraudulently. He's paid back 44,000 of that. Some high profile names in there. Dennis O'Brien gave him 130 grand, also gave him the use of a car and an apartment while he was in Dublin. The pair met on a golf trip in 1997. But you go through the list then, he got money from a pensioner, a local businessman, even €5,000 from one of his cousins, and all on the basis that he needed money for rare cancer treatment in the US and that he would pay it back when he got a claim from the HSE for medical negligence. Of course, he never had cancer. There was never a medical negligence claim. And it was all part of this web of deceit. And it's just some interesting bit of colour in all this. You wonder how this affects people when these lies that they've told are being put before them and they're being prepared to go into prison. I know Catherine Feegan in the Irish Independent is noting that she saw him in an animated conversation with his legal team and laughing. So clearly he isn't, he's not really portraying this contrite figure that one might expect on their day of reckoning.
It's a very interesting colour piece, actually, where she talks about just the colour around the courts that you might be familiar if you've been down there. And I think that was when he was having his lunch over a chicken curry and chips. But then afterwards, when it dawned that he was going to get a sentence, he wasn't going to walk out of the court yesterday and remanded over the weekend, that there was that chat with a security guard, and sort of the reality then seemed to hit him later in the day.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's one of those strange ones, Lynn. Anyone who's had cancer, I've had cancer myself, we all know somebody who has. It's just one of those things that is not, it's almost sacrosanct. You know, you don't fake having something that serious.
No, and that's to actually even say, I think in one case to the couple that I have the same cancer as your wife, do you know what I mean? It's really sort of tugging at someone's heartstrings and their vulnerabilities. Mm. And as you said, people with cancer, you know, it's a scary time for anyone, their family as well. And to exploit that is really, really, it's a new low. But also I think for anybody who's ever been defrauded from money, there's that level of, you know, you feel stupid. You feel, you know, that you can't trust anyone because, you know, you did a good thing. And that has a long-term impact on them as well. But to use cancer, as you said, is just, you know, doesn't bear thinking about that somebody would do that and exploit people through that story. But I think the legacy will be a lot longer just because that's the one thing that anybody who's ever been scammed out of money will tell you. They feel so embarrassed and ashamed, and they don't trust people in the future.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the things, was it the judge or somebody said, I can't remember who it was in the papers today, Craig, that don't feel that guilt. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, if someone, the ilk of Dennis O'Brien, who was no fool, whatever you think of him, was conned out of money, this was a very sophisticated act and that he was putting on.
Because, I mean, you know, you just don't expect that level that level of such an egregious lie. And I mean, even one of the victims is pensioner Thomas Butler. He was actually a volunteer driver for the Irish Cancer Society. I mean, he really was picking on people who he knew either because they're closest to him or because of their admiration for him at the sporting field that would be susceptible to his lie. And it's just uncomprehensible. And it reminds me actually a bit of the fraudster Michael Lynn and reading the book around him. And like Lynn said, when you hear the impact it has on victims, and a lot of the time they feel shame because they feel that they shouldn't have been conned by this person. And oftentimes they don't, like obviously Dennis O'Brien can afford to lose, but often other people, it takes a significant impact on their financial health and causes long-term consequences in their family, you know.
I suppose the flip side, just to move away from DJ Carey, and that sentencing obviously is going to be on Monday. He's pleaded guilty to, I think it was 10 counts of dishonesty, including inducing 13 victims to make payments to him. But the if we're to take the cancer, good news that's in the paper today, Lynn, Richard Boyd Barrett, was fantastic to hear him on the radio yesterday, and he is going to be phasing himself back into the Dáil over the next couple of months.
I know, it really was. I was delighted to hear him on the radio and to say that he had that good news about getting the all clear, that the treatment had worked, even though he has a long road of recovery left for him. But, you know, Richard Boyd Barrett is one of those voices that is missed. You know, he's known for his roaring and his shouting across the Dáil chamber, and given as well that we've had just a successful presidential campaign for those parties on the left, I think Richard Boyd Barrett was missed in that campaign, and it is great to see him back, and we wish him all the best.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be roaring across the Dáil chamber once again in the not too distant future, I look forward to. While we're staying on that, and you mentioned it there, the general or the presidential election, it doesn't feel like it was only a week ago. The ballot boxes were opening literally this time last week across the country, but it's talked on in a few different regards in the papers today. We might get into Micheál Martin in the future. There's a couple of pieces, including one, Lynn, that caught my eye in the Irish Times. A left alliance must come with a warning for workers. And this opinion piece essentially saying that don't count on the left to look after you and to be the great hero if this unity left alliance continues into a government in 4 years' time.
I have to say it was a bizarre piece, to be honest. And I know Madeleine, she's a councillor out in South Dublin County Council. But it sort of played into that joke about, you know, that the first item on the agenda is the split. I mean, we've just come out of a really successful campaign where parties of the left came together, do you know what I mean, put aside differences because we're all individual parties. We all have different policies, different positions, but to have a collective agreement about certain principles and policies. And then to have this piece, you know, sort of saying that, you know, Labour aren't left, the Greens aren't left, and Sinn Féin aren't that left. And, you know, it's just like, really? Is that what the message? Like, I mean, there's going to be enough naysayers out there. We don't need the left trying to run down the idea of a united left, because I think it is really exciting. And it wasn't just the presidential election. We've seen it, on the speaking rights was the first time. And then we've seen it with, PMBs around disability, around autism. And like, you were meeting people on the streets who were saying, it's great. I'm delighted to see you all. It was a really powerful imagery to see, you know, the leaders of the left party standing on the plinth together, united. And then we have somebody from the left who's trying to undo all of that. It is disappointing.
Yeah, I have a few things to say on this. First of all, she poses a question initially and she says, is the system working for you? And the answer, she says, the answer is no. And I think that is a fair point if you look at why Catherine Connolly was so successful, because Kevin Cunningham, the pollster, Ireland Thinks, did some really good exit poll analysis on this. And 51% of people who voted for Catherine Connolly said they feel worse off now than they did a year ago. So there was also a kind of I think it was 70%, right? And only 51% of those voters would vote for a left coalition. So I think that creates an interesting insight into why people voted for Catherine Connolly. Yes, some of them voted because they supported left policies and they wanted that. But I don't think you can get away from the fact that a lot of people feel worse off now than they did a year ago. And they're put into binary choice with a poor government candidate and after what you would call a disappointing budget for many people. On the piece itself, I must say, I mean, she has a go at the Labour Party and the Greens for not doing enough in government. I mean, you know, they were both minority players in a government with a kind of with centre-right parties. I think both will point to some positives that they got in, whether it was Labour getting through issues around minimum wage with the Green Party. I mean, I think the Greens did quite a lot on a policy regard for such a small party. You know, a lot of left housing policy would talk about cost rental. That was real. If it wasn't for the Green Party, that wouldn't have been in the programme for government. We wouldn't have any cost rental house at the moment, I don't think. So to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater there and say you're not pure enough, it does. As Lynn was saying, it goes to the heart of what's wrong with left-wing politics sometimes, because they can't, you know, they can't decide on things, and everyone has to be. If you're not pure enough, well, then you're out of the tent. Mm. And I think that is going to be the challenge when it comes around to. Well, actually, I don't think there can be a united left, if I'm honest, because I don't think you're going to get common policies, and I don't think you're going to be able to agree on a kind of electoral strategy. Take, for example, take Dublin Bay South. There's no way that Sinn Féin aren't going to come hammer and tongs at Owen Hayes, you know, to try and win back Chris Andrews' seat there. And I'm just wondering how you can have any sort of niceties when you go down constituency by constituency and you're fighting for kind of some of the same seats. I don't see how it could hold.
That probably is the big problem, Lynn, isn't it, at the end of the day?
But I think we have an electoral system that doesn't lend itself to, it's not a list system. So in other European countries, you will have united left candidates because it's based on that list. So, I mean, the reality is that, yes, everybody will be fighting for their own seat. But the transfer left, I think, could be certainly bigged up a lot more. I've always, in any election I've campaigned, I've always said, you know, vote left and transfer left. I think more of us could be calling for that, and in a more strategic way, because we did bring in 2020, lots of other left-wing candidates came in, do you mean, on Sinn Féin transfers. So I think there is potential to grow that. I'd also point to the Right to Change movement that came out of the water charges, where, you know, there was this grassroots mobilisation, the trade unions were involved in it, and people agreed on certain principles. So the right to housing was one of those principles. Do you mean, so we agree on free education? So there are key pillars that a left-wing government could go out and campaign on, that we agree on these positions. And then, of course, let's see what way, you know, the numbers fall on the day, and then to try and build a programme for government on the basis of that. But that we have key policy goals that we want to see, which is absolutely number one, has to be a change in direction of housing.
But so I noticed, Paul Murphy, People for Profit, has been keen to try and build on this and have a left-wing conference and try and increase this. Mary Lou McDonald was a bit more circumspect on it. And I understand why, because if I look at the three People Before Profit seats at the moment, if you look at Paul Murphy's seat, that would be one that Sinn Féin should be going after again. You know, they had two candidates there, they got one over the line. Your second candidate was, you know, in the mix there. And you talk about the Sinn Féin vote falling back in the last election compared to 2020. That's one where you go, okay, we need to get our, if I was Sinn Féin, that's the one we need to get our vote back up. That's the seat we need to be targeting, because the main voting blocks in terms of left and right aren't changing really that much, I wouldn't say. So you'd be looking there, you'd be looking to Dublin West, where Paul Donnelly topped the polls spectacularly in 2020. His vote fell, first preference vote fell about 3,000 last time out. That's another one where I'd be going, okay, can we get Rhí Coppinger's seat there? So when you go down on a granular basis, I just struggle to see how it can hold.
And when you actually put all the maths together, you may end up with many more Sinn Féin TDs, necessarily left TDs. That will be an argument we'll have many, many times over the next 4 years. But we do need to talk, Craig, about Micheál Martin, and you've been writing about him this morning, that the rebels are looking for a smoking gun to end him.
Yes, and I mean, there's a couple of fronts to this war, but I mean, the current one really will be this review into the botched presidential election campaign that saw Jim Gavin running on behalf of the party. There is a sense that when the timeline is laid out from the rebels' perspective, that there will be things that undermine Micheál Martin there. I mean, one of them, which I mentioned today, was that, you know, Fionnán Sheehan put in his first queries on Jim Gavin on the 8th of September, when he specifically said he'd questions about a former tenant in one of his in his former property. The day after he was then put before the parliamentary party, Jim Gavin, and ratified. And it goes back, I suppose, to this sense that people talk about, like John LaHarsh would have talked about, they would have expected that homework would have been done on a candidate before they were asked to vote for him. And if we look at what has changed on Saturday, compared to what had happened before, we had the 5 hour long parliamentary party meeting where everyone was, there was this cathartic outpouring of, you know, blah, 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 but no one really put it up to Micheál Martin.
Wielded a knife at it.
Yes. And then things changed. So just as Catherine Connolly was about to go on stage to be declared the winner of the presidential election, John LaHarsh, Fianna Fáil TD, who was also a key ally of Jim O'Callaghan, was behind the curtain speaking to Pat Kenny on News Talk, and was very critical of Micheál Martin's judgment. And it really was viewed within the party across the board that this was the starting gun on the heave, right? Mm. So the race is on now. And I will say, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, does that heave have a leader? Because as much as he may be seen as an ally of Jim O'Callaghan, there's been nothing publicly, at least, that suggests that the likes of a Jim O'Callaghan would be willing to be the one. Because you know that old saying in Fianna Fáil, he who wields the knife never wears the crown.
Sure, but I think if you talk to any of the serious players in this game, they'll tell you that they don't think that the typically cautious and measured John LaHarsh would have been acting without the nod from Jim O'Callaghan. I think that that's a fair assumption. And I think there has been some work, I suppose, in the Micheál camp and True Party HQ to, I guess, smoke Jim O'Callaghan out into coming out and saying it. I think this week and the following week will be very critical. This week, Micheál Martin is away at COP, so there's officially no parliamentary party meeting of Fianna Fáil. I recall in 2022 when he was in Ukraine and a group of 30 backbenchers met in secret, though it was rumbled by Jack Chambers and Niall Collins at one point. And so this week is going to be very pivotal. And then the following week, you should have the review into all this taking place. And I think if there's any slippage in that date in terms of delivery, there will be trouble as well. And so just one other thing to mention that I think is very important. This was
briefly, if you can,
intervention of Malcolm Byrne, who pivoted the debate away from the presidential election and spoke about housing delivery, right, and a need for a radical change there. And really that's a signal to his party colleagues. Look, if we don't have a radical shift in this, all of our seats are on the line next time out. And either we make a change now or we persist as we are.
Craig Hughes, political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, and Lynn Boylan, MEP for Dublin and Sinn Féin. Thanks so much for joining us.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Your future self will thank you. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off your next order. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.